Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here we go, hour number two. We'll finish up our conversation about student athletes in the NCAA now could be forced to work up to 24 straight days after the NCAA revokes the rule allowing one day off a week for these student athletes. We'll get to your calls here in just a second on that. We got to talk some U.S. Open. Koepka, Mickelson will do that. We'll have our daily World Cup update. And then Joel Eriksson, a little later in the hour, will talk some Saints with us. Just did a Facebook Live about this issue of the NCAA. Find that on our Facebook page, the WWL Radio Facebook page. Like that. You'll find the video there. You can weigh in with your comments, your phone calls, and texts. We're going to get to those now. Here's a quick text at 87870 from the 504. What's the motivation for the rule change? What's to gain? Well, that's the question that I had. What was the motivation? Here's the problem. People at the Sun Belt Conference, people in the NCAA were not available when asked about this. We don't know. We imagine that there were some coaches, basketball coaches and otherwise, who said, hey, I want to be able to work my athletes 24 straight days. I don't want this one day off a week. I would imagine that's where it came from, a very misguided rule. I had to cut off Joe in Mandeville because we were up at a hard break, top of the hour. Joe, you're back on, man. Thanks for holding.
Okay, first of all, you need to understand, this is an opportunity afforded by the university and the NCAA, okay? Nobody's putting a gun to your head to do this, okay? This is an opportunity for you to take advantage of your talent, go play basketball, football, baseball for the university that you love, that you prefer to play for, and that you can gain valuable achievement and valuable experience to take it to the next level. What's wrong with that?
Well, Joe, and I actually agree with everything you said there. Here's the problem. We have labor laws on the books that if I was a server, if I was a salesperson, okay, well, I've gone over it three times, but you can't tell me. You think that athletes should just be exempt because they're athletes? Like, I don't get it, Joe. You think that just because they're athletes, they should be exempt from the laws that you or I are held to?
I'm telling you. If it was 80 hours a week, I could understand it, but it's not.
But ask any athlete. This is the thing, Joe. You ask these big-time major sport athletes, how many hours a week are you working? How many hours a day is your coach requiring you to put in? And it's 20. 6, 8, 10 hours a day. The law says, the rule says 20, but there's voluntary, not really voluntary meetings, film sessions, there's travel, there's all of that that's not calculated in. And here's my question, Joe, because I think you and I would agree, right, that an education is valuable. Like, working for that's certainly something that I would be okay with. But how in the world, Joe, can these athletes get an education when there's 24 straight days when they can't get to a classroom?
Listen. I'm telling you the true story here. My son went to LSU. And he had a very high-profile running back on the football team in his math class. And I'm telling you, he showed up one time. That's it. One time. The very first day. All right? I'm telling you, it's not what you think it is. You act like they're all high-profile athletes and they're all high-profile students and they're all geniuses.
Whoa.
They're not.
Joe, now you're putting words in my mouth. I never said that. Now, I'll go back to you said the running back went to class one time. My point is that's an issue. That's a problem. Are you okay with that?
I would be if it was 7:30 in the morning, but it's at 11:30 in the morning. Come on.
No, I agree. Wait, are you saying that it's not okay? Because I'm saying it's not okay that this athlete is showing up to class – and taking away money and scholarships from regular students, and mainly because their athletic department or their head coach says, no, you got to work for us now 24 straight days. Now, are some of these athletes, Ben Simmons, who didn't give a lick about school, is it on them? Absolutely, it's on them. If they're given a fair shot to get some kind of education and they don't do it, that is on them, absolutely. I am not saying that all of these athletes are college material. And if they had an opportunity to go get vocational experience somewhere else, they could and probably should do it. My point is, we again have laws, many laws. You go to your break room, I know we do right here, they've got an entire wall with the U.S. labor laws. Things they can and can't do. They can't work Tim Zimmer 24 straight days, and if he says, no, I don't want to do that, fire him. That is not allowed. In fact, they can't even do it 7 days. And if Tim says, I want a day off this week, if they said, nope, I'm sorry, your job's going to go to somewhere else, they wouldn't be able to do that. The NCAA, who is a monopoly now, is flouting this and circumventing these rules because they have legislated this that with their lobbyists in Congress and their lobbyists in the NBA who say, nope, can't go to the NBA, and there's no other league here professionally in the United States, really, that you can go and really get training at. You got to go to college, and then all of a sudden you got to work 24 straight days for us. No break. Who cares about your recovery? Who cares about your injury? Let's go to Donnie in Metairie. Donnie, you're on WWL.
Hey, Seth. I think the real big picture here is being overlooked completely. As a former Division I athlete who played football at a major university 10 years ago, 24 days, that doesn't really matter. In fact, if you told me that after 24 straight days I would get a complete day off, I would actually take that. Because when you show up for camp in August, between August and the bowl game in late December, early January, I'll tell you the days you have completely off. You have the Monday off of your bye week, the Saturday and Sunday off of your bye week, and if you're lucky, a few days for Christmas. I actually flew out to bowl sites twice on Christmas Day in a 4-year span. So 24 days, that really doesn't even matter. That's irrelevant. That's on paper. Even some Fridays of travel days for away games, you would get a quick lift in that morning before you flew out that afternoon. Mm-hmm. So 24 days, really, that's irrelevant. That's just on paper. So them changing it really doesn't affect anything for football. I can't speak on other sports, but I'm telling you, throughout the football season, when you show up to 2-a-days in August until you finish your bowl game, you may have 4 days at most. If you're lucky enough to get Christmas, a few days off for Christmas, maybe 2 or 3 more, where you don't show up to that building.
Yeah. No, Donnie, I completely believe you there that coaches
So if you told me, hey, I promise you on the 24th day you'll get a day off, I'd actually sign up for that.
But I don't think it's not that. The only thing that they're right, switching right, no. now is – right. So I think we're on the same page there. And here's the thing. Go ahead. You had another point?
I was just going to say, so my point is that it really doesn't matter what the rules state. They find a way to get you there no matter what.
Yeah, but, and here's the thing, Donnie, and this is great insight. You go to the NFL or any other sports workplace that the labor has a say – and has bargained the rules that they are governed by, they're guaranteed days off. They are. You go to the NFL football season, and you'll see some guys in the building every day if they want to be, but if you're a player on the Saints team that doesn't want to come in on the Monday or whatever day it is, that's bargained as a day off. Now, the rules are a little more complex than that in the NFL. Or any of the professional sports organizations. But here's the thing. In the NCAA, when the college athletes have zero power, and this is proving it again, and what Donnie says is absolutely right. There are already coaches flouting the rules. They're going to be forced to work whatever their coach says they want. That coach is getting paid multi-millions of dollars every single year. And there are very good coaches who love and care about their athletes, and that is the vast majority of those coaches. But there are also very selfish coaches and athletic directors and administrators that care nothing about their paycheck, the endowments to the sports department, to the win-loss total, to the headlines in the newspaper, and they don't care a lick about the athletes themselves. That's where we're going to run into major issues with this. And anybody that argues, 24 straight days of work is no big deal, it is. And if they were doing it before, and Donnie, I agree they were, that's still not right. But now it's legislated that they can. Let's go to Ryan and Slidell. Ryan, you're on WWL.
Oh, what's going on? Look, this whole thing is getting skewed. In all honesty, these kids are interns.
Okay.
It is no different than a kid that is a law intern that is put into a prestigious law firm where they get a workaholic boss and they have to work 7 days a week on a briefing, or they get put into a prestigious medical practice where they have to work.
Okay, if I'm going to that law firm and I get a workaholic boss, lawyer, who's working me 24 straight days, I could go down the street and find another lawyer to intern for, right?
Wait a second. So what kid does that?
What kid does what?
What kid worth his salt does that? Maybe I just like to work. I'm not 100% sure.
But hold on here, Ryan. You got to answer my question here. You just brought up, it was your hypothetical. If that intern, if that paralegal says you're working me too hard, I want to go somewhere else, they have the ability to go across the street and work for Harmon and Harmon, right?
Unless that, you know, law firm they're working for is a booster and gives them a bad mark, and then it ruins their grade for the semester.
Okay, hold on here. They could still go across the street. You're missing my point here. They could literally walk across the street and put in papers. Okay, if you have a basketball player, and by the way, this is not a shot at Will Wade. I'm just using this as an example. I think he would be, from talking to him and knowing him, I think he is one that wouldn't use this rule to the max. But just for argument's sake, if you're a basketball player at LSU and you get worked 24 straight days and you say, I've had it. You're working me too much here. This is a violation of labor laws. You know what the NCAA says? The NCAA says you don't have any rights to go across the street. You don't have any rights to complain or go seek employment elsewhere. That's the difference here. It's the monopoly, and they've monopolized, and it's certainly not, some people want to say it's servitude. It's not that, because you have other opportunities. Let's not go that far. But it is a monopoly of this sport and of their opportunity. They can't use their likeness to make their own money. They're not getting paid in dollars and cents. And the people above them and at the top of that pyramid is Mark Emmert and all the suits at the NCAA are making the organization anyways, and it's filtered down through their member schools, literally billions of dollars. Billions with a B. It is absurd to say it's okay to work somebody 24 straight days without a day off. I don't care what you're doing. Especially when the organization that made this change comes on radio stations and television stations across the country and says, oh, we care about academics. This is actually student athletes first. Remember, the student is first. This is all about their education. Give me a break with that. That's my point here. If you want to weigh in, 504-260-1870 is the phone number. Our WWL opinion poll: should college athletes have at least one day off a week? Guaranteed. Yes or no? Log on to WWL.com. Cast your vote. I'm Seth Dunlap. It's Double Coverage on WWL. Hot topic. Text lines, phone lines fire tonight. The NCAA revoking the one guaranteed day off a week for its student athletes under certain scenarios. Those athletes could be forced to work 24 straight days. That's what we're talking about. Let's go to the text line. Here's a text from the 985. You're right. I see Buku lawsuits ahead. Students first. A text also from the 985. I agree. Downtime necessary. From the 504. Some play for the love of the game with no intentions of moving on to the NFL and know they will never get drafted. Here's a text from the 504. I'm a doctor and I make less than any professional athlete. I make peanuts in residency. Neither then or now are there restrictions on my day's work. First, let me stop you there. Yes, they are. That is a misinformed statement. I'm not going to use the L word there. That is a misinformed statement. There are government labor laws that restrict the hours that you can be forced to work. If you don't realize that, you need to check them out. Not trying to snap back, but if you text my program and expect me to read your text on air, you better come with facts, because that's not a fact. I bet I'm working more hours in each day than these kids, says that doctor who just texted. Probably are, and you have a much more important job as a doctor than playing football. That's a completely different conversation. But also, you're not forced to work 24 straight days for just food and shelter. And don't give me this, it's also for an education. They're not getting an education when you're forcing them to work 24 straight days. A lot of those days, not even in the same town where their university is, because they're out playing games and on planes and moving around. Here's a text from the 985. Interns, exactly. When somebody compared him, our last caller compared him to interns. I guess I could see that you could compare them to interns, but here's the difference. If I'm an intern at that sales office and somebody's trying to work me 24 straight days, I can go down the street and find a better situation. The NCAA, again, has monopolized this where that basketball player cannot go anywhere. They literally can't transfer. They won't let them. They're there for that school until that school lets them out, or they want to sit out a full year and go somewhere else. I really am completely baffled by the amount of texters, and it's not a lot, but there are a few, that think working 24 straight days with no time off in whatever field it is okay. It's kind of a comment on our current society, I think. That's not okay. Have a little life-work balance. Let's not legislate it in to make our kids work 24 straight days. Come on.
CBS News Update. President Trump is ordering up new tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese products and says they'll take effect if Beijing doesn't change its trade policies, including plans to put tariffs on $50 billion worth of U.S. goods. China calls it blackmail. Veronique DeJury is with George Mason University's Mercatus Center.
I think at this point we're officially in a trade war when you have country after country retaliating, or at least threatening to retaliate against one another. And unfortunately, there's no winners in a trade war.
CBS News has a new poll on the president's use of tariffs, including on allies like Canada and Europe. Deputy Director of Surveys Jennifer DePinto.
48% of Americans disapprove of President Trump's decision to impose tariffs on steel and aluminum, while fewer, 36%, approve.
CBS News Update, I'm Pam Coulter.
Let's talk football.
No, not football.
Football. Soccer haters, cover your ears. It's time for our daily World Cup update.
Hey, new sounder. I love it. I'm going to be doing this for the next month. Cover your ears for about 2 minutes. Let's give you an update on the World Cup. I think it is proving again why it is one of the great tournaments, not only in sports, but also one of the great galvanizing, unifying things in our sports society, which really, if you get down to it, I've talked about it on this show before, that's what sports should do. It's bring us together. I had the opposite conversation with the NFL. But right now, just go down to your local pub or bar. on any game day, which is pretty much every day right now, and look and watch. It's pretty cool. So over the weekend, the first weekend of the World Cup, here's the big moments, what you need to know. We're just trying to inform you so you can have a little water cooler talk. And even if you don't really like soccer, there's you can find some really cool moments of this. It was really fun yesterday watching that Mexico-Germany match with Dave Potter, who certainly is our board op on the weekends, studio producer. Not like soccer at all. He didn't watch a lick of it, but it's not World Cup time. But he was really getting into it. The pageantry, the rivalry of the countries, and the high tension. And that's one thing that soccer brings that I think very few, if any, other sports do, the tension of these low-scoring matches towards the end. I actually think the low-scoring is a good thing that way, not a bad thing. But here's the big moments, what you need to know. We just told you Mexico and Germany, well, it was the stunner of all stunners, one of the biggest stunners I can remember in pool play recently. Mexico beats Germany, the defending champs, and the overwhelming favorite to win it again this year, 1-0. They got a goal in the 33rd minute yesterday, and they wound up winning that one 1-0. Back previously in the weekend, this was on Saturday, Iceland. Yeah, Iceland's in the World Cup. Just about 300,000 people in their country. They've never been to the World Cup before, but here they are as the ultimate Cinderellas, and they get matched up against the Goliath that is Argentina, and also Lionel Messi, one of the best players on the planet. Lo and behold, it's 1-1 late. Iceland somehow, some way, scratching and clawing their way to a draw. Messi, late in the game, has a chance, just like 4 years ago, on a penalty kick to give Argentina the win, and it goes wide. And Messi's struggle at the World Cup continue, and Iceland gets a crazy draw. Another draw, Portugal and Spain, the two neighboring rivals there on the peninsula in Europe. They tie 3-3. The other scores yesterday's, we'll do this daily on the program, just a couple of minutes of it. Brazil, they tie with Switzerland. They get a draw. Belgium beats up on Panama 3-0, and Sweden edges out South Korea 1-0. Coming up tomorrow, we've got Colombia and Japan and Poland and Senegal. Tim says boring games. Tim, you watch any of this over the weekend?
I watched a little bit today, and I will say the Panama game hurt even more because I felt like the way that Panama got destroyed today by Belgium just made me realize how much USA should have been in the tournament. They lost 3-0 to Belgium. Belgium's probably going to get to the, at least to the quarterfinals. They're really good. They may even get to the semis. They're probably a sleeper right now, a dark horse. But Panama's just – they looked – I mean, it was 0-0 at halftime, but Belgium just came out in the second half and just destroyed Panama.
Yep. Indeed. Yeah, I'm excited about this. I'm fired up about this whole tournament. The U.S., by the way, they shouldn't be in. Absolutely shouldn't be in. And then I hear over the weekend Bruce Arena – who was the head culprit for their meltdown. He was the manager of the U.S. team when they couldn't get a win when they needed to against teams that had no business even being on the same pitch with the United States. Oh, yeah, he wanted to make the media rounds and say, what's wrong with U.S. soccer? What's wrong with U.S. soccer is you, Bruce. You had your moment with U.S. soccer a couple of decades ago, and you were brought back as a retread, and you had one of the most embarrassing moments in our country's really sports history as a country on the international stage. We got some sound. Here's Messi again, his kick, penalty kick to win it, going wide.
15 prior appearances. Can he give Argentina the lead once again? No, it's saved! Benega first to the follow-up, diving header away!
Great tournament. We'll have another World Cup update for you tomorrow. Here's a couple of texts before we go to break back about our NCAA topic. From the 504, who cares? Is anyone complaining? Don't play basketball. They can play in the league overseas. Yeah, that's just the typical bitter, I guess, sports fan, because you're listening to this program, so you're a sports fan of some kind. It's entertainment. They get paid to entertain us. At least the professional ones do. It's because they make more money than you or me. I'm sorry, that's free market economics. It's a whole other discussion. There's a text from the 985. I'd be willing to bet that most people that say it's okay for these student athletes to work 24 straight days are the ones working Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. And watch these student-athletes on TV. A lot of hypocrites in today's society. Yeah, that's a little harsh, although I do get the gist of that text saying, you wouldn't want to be forced to work 24 straight days. And if you think that's okay, I'll go back to what I said last segment. That is a complete indictment of our society. It is not okay to work anybody 24 straight days under normal circumstances. Once in a while, okay. But this is legislated in where these students could be doing it, student athletes, the entire year. All right, let's get to break. Joel Erickson coming up. We'll talk about the Saints, and maybe they can take advantage of the new kickoff rules. I'll ask him about it. Here's a text from the 504. World Cup soccer commercials are actually great. Oh, come on here. Allow yourself to be entertained. That's all I'm saying. Doesn't mean you got to like soccer the rest of the time, but if you're not entertained as a sports fan by some of the things we're watching already at the World Cup that's only, what, 4 days old? Man, I think you're kind of a Scrooge. Just our daily World Cup update. Let's bring in Joel Erickson, as promised, covering the Saints for The Advocate. Joel, are you allowing yourself to be entertained by the World Cup at all?
No, it's been on my TV just about, I mean, the early games I'm missing. the 5 a.m. ones I haven't been watching, but I've watched parts of just about all the rest of them. I don't know if I'm a big soccer fan, but I really appreciate the sport, in especially at the international level.
Yeah, they could just be entertained. Nobody has to be a huge soccer fan to like this. Now, here's the thing. Tim Zimmer is the one who's up at like 5 a.m., our studio producer, the guy who sets up these interviews, Joel. He's up at like 5 watching this stuff. I don't understand how he does it. But let's talk a little Saints at Joel A. Erickson on Twitter. You wrote an article today about Patrick Robinson adjusting to the nickel role in a more aggressive Saints defense. How is P. Rob reacclimating himself to the city, to the team?
Well, you know, I thought it was interesting. We didn't get a chance. We only got him for 4 minutes or so. I didn't get a chance to really, really dive deep into what he was saying. But he said that in Dennis Allen's scheme, it's a lot more man-to-man, whereas in Philly it was more zone. A lot of that makes sense. Dennis Allen likes to blitz. Philly uses all that defensive line and four-man pressures to get their pressure. So, but that is a change for somebody in the slot. Part of the reason Robinson's so good in the slot is that he's good at handling all of the crossing receivers and pick plays and all that kind of stuff that happens when you're on the inside. But when you're man-to-man, it's a little bit of a different identification. So he's just saying he's got to reorient himself and get his bearings in a defense that's a little bit more man-to-man based.
Does that concern you at all? Because he was one of the best nickel corners last year, according to all like the advanced analytics. But that, like you just said, in a zone scheme. Now that he's back to man, we're going to see a regression here. Is he not going to be the Robinson we thought that the Saints were getting from Philly?
My hypothesis and my guess is that the Saints know that about Patrick from his film, and probably we were just going through, you know, off-season OTA stuff like that. They weren't really getting into the depths of the scheme. Dennis Allen's scheme is diverse enough that I would bet that maybe the answer is that not necessarily on the outside. You wouldn't want to take Marshawn Lattimore out of man if you don't have to, but maybe on the inside, maybe they're playing a little bit more zone than we saw maybe last year or in the past, just because of those skills and because they've got guys who can play that now. Kirk Coleman, Patrick Robinson, they've played in those types of defenses, whereas, you know, one of Kenny Vaccaro's weaknesses was assignment football, which is obviously key when you're in a zone.
What do you think about the position, the depth, the talent there? I know the top-end talent with Lattimore, with Patrick Robinson is there. What do you think about the rest of the group?
Well, it's an interesting I think one of the interesting position battles is further down that cornerback depth chart. P.J. Williams seems fairly entrenched, I would say, after last season as kind of the next man up behind Robinson and Crawley and Lattimore. But there's going to be a fight down there
I think in that fifth and sixth, if they have a sixth spots on the roster, I think special teams is going to be a big deal. Nichelle Jamerson, the pick out of Wisconsin, big special teams history. Arthur Millett, who I also just wrote a story on. Aaron Glenn said that he really thought he was going to push for a spot this year. He's also got a lot of special teams history. Devontae Harris has some history on special teams, although not all of it is great. That's obviously going to play a role in it, but it's interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see who lands those spots because what we've learned over the last couple of years is that eventually that guy ends up playing, even if it's only for one or two games. They're going to end up seeing some time on defense. It'll be interesting to see who kind of shakes out in those extra spots. And, you know, maybe this is a year where instead of keeping five safeties, they keep six corners and four safeties. There's an interesting all of the position battles, I think, on this team are really further down the depth chart, the key ones. So I think that's going to be interesting to watch once we get to camp.
Talking to Joel Erickson here on Double Coverage. He covers the Saints for The Advocate. And sticking with the secondary, I want to talk about a position battle in just a second you're talking about for returner. But in the secondary, Marcus Williams, man, he seems to be the silent assassin. He's not talking to the media. He doesn't want to talk about that play, I'm sure. Thinks we're just going to barrage him with those questions. But he has been, at least in my mind, incredibly good as much as he can be in these mini camps, sideline to sidelines. He just looks bigger. He looks faster than he was last year. I am incredibly impressed with what I'm seeing from Williams, but maybe, I don't know, man, maybe it's just like the camp thing where we're making mountains out of molehills here. What do you think with Williams?
Well, the thing about Williams is he has the physical gifts and the range and the ability to really stand out when the ball's in the air. We saw some of that in the regular season last year. He made some incredible plays. And I think the thing is with him, with Lattimore, with some of these guys, as well as they played last year, and Marcus Williams last year was a better free safety than they'd really had in a long, long time. It was still just his first year, and you expect there to be a jump from first year to second year just because he's done the NFL thing before now. He's understanding how to prepare. He's understanding to do all that stuff. And so I think you're going to see more of those chances for all of that athleticism to shine because he's more sure of what he's doing and when he can take chances and that kind of thing. What we know of him, he's got an incredible vertical, he's got incredible range, incredible instincts, and so I think he's probably going to stand out all the way through, and it's going to be difficult to get a deep ball down on the Saints this year.
Let's finally talk about one of the battles you're talking about. One thing that I'm really intrigued with, I think it's the most interesting battle, one of them, this entire offseason, that's for returner. They brought in Boston Scott by the draft. They've got Turner here. Not a lot of people are talking about. Lewis handled those duties late last year. How do you think this battle shakes itself out, Joel?
I am also as intrigued as you are, and I don't really know if I can handicap a favorite. There's a lot of guys who sort of fit certain things, but there's not an obvious one. I mean, you know, you would think that Ted Ginn would have been obvious last year, but they kind of got him out of the role after he had some bobbles last year, and I don't know if you're going to keep him there at his age. So I think that's a really interesting spot, punt returner especially. I think kick returner, even with the new rules, is interesting, but I think there's still going to be a lot of touchbacks, and so that makes me wonder if you don't do something where if you really want to return, you do what they did against Tampa Bay and stick 41 back there. I don't think you'll see him on punts, and really it could come from a lot of different places on punts, and it'll be interesting to see how that competition shakes out. One of the things I was hoping to see, or not hoping to see, but one of the things that I talked about whenever we – looked at the draft was, you know, if there was a guy with a lot of punt return ability, I could see the Saints making that pick just because they don't necessarily have a clear punt returner. Tommy Lewis has had his moments, but he's also had a lot of
iffy moments back there in his 2 years, and I don't know that he's the answer.
Me too. I can't wait to see how it all works out. I can't wait to see those new kickoff rules come the preseason. You can read Joel's article on Patrick Robinson online at The Advocate. Joel, always appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, no problem, Seth. Thanks.
All right. At Joel A. Erickson on Twitter. Follow him there. Again, covers the Saints for The Advocate. We'll take a quick break here. Phone lines are open for you. If you want to weigh in on that, you want to weigh in on the NCAA talk we were discussing for most of the first hour and a half of the program, 504-260-1870. That's the phone number, 870-870 is the text number. Coming back, we'll talk a little U.S. Open. Koepka wins, Mickelson steals the show. I'm Seth Dunlap. It's Double Coverage on WWL. Remember last week, a couple of weeks ago, we had a texter who was just brought some little bit of overboard Ken Crawley love. I think this is the same one at the text line from the 504. This is laughable, Seth. Not mentioning the Saints' best cornerback, Ken Crawley. All right. Well, there you go. I mentioned him. We had to talk about Crawley. I think Crawley's going to have a good year. I like Ken. He's no Lattimore, though. Let's talk a little U.S. Open really quick. Tim, did you watch Phil's meltdown?
I probably watched more golf this weekend than I've ever watched before.
me too, because it was so fun. First off, let me get this out of the way, because we don't have a lot of time to talk about this topic tonight, and it's been talked out pretty much all day everywhere else. But I didn't have a problem with what Phil did. I thought it was funny more than anything else, and he got penalized like he should have been. Two strokes, just in frustration. If you don't know the history behind Phil at the U.S. Open, by the way, it's the one major he hasn't won, and he's finished. And he's finished second five times. So finally, in his home state, things boiled over, frustration boiled over. I just thought it was a moment of humanity. And was it wrong? Sure, it was wrong. And that's why he was penalized two strokes, but it's not any kind of legacy-killing offense.
Yeah, anytime Phil can take a shot at the USGA or, you know, USPGA or whatever you want to call it.
USGA, yeah.
USGA, he's going to do it because he obviously dislikes them. He has never won the U.S. Open before, and I think it was more of a frustration moment where he just said, screw it, I'm going to hit the ball anyway because I'm already out of this tournament. I don't see the big deal. Now, people thought like he committed murder, apparently, by making that hit. He didn't hit it with his foot, so he didn't break that one other rule, but he broke a rule where he hit a moving object, which, I mean, if he would have made the putt, you could have said, hey, it actually turned out better for him, but he almost did, and it didn't go in.
Yeah. I didn't have a problem with it. And I also didn't have a problem with the course being exceedingly tough. You did?
Well, I thought on Saturday the course was ridiculous. Like, you saw the scores early in the morning. You had a couple under par. But Saturday afternoon, the best score in the afternoon was, like, plus three. All the leaders were doing terrible. At one point, Koepka was, I want to say, he was 8 or 9 strokes back of Dustin Johnson, and he ended up winning the whole thing. So Saturday really cost all the leaders a chance at, you know, extending their lead.
Are you somebody, you're a NASCAR fan, are you somebody who likes the road courses or doesn't like them?
I think the road courses are fine. They'll be at Sonoma this weekend. I mean, it's different type of racing. They actually go right.
Right, but isn't it, it's more difficult than making the same turn for 500 miles, right? My point is here, Tim, that I don't mind these exceptional golfers, world-class, best of what they do, looking a little more human.
I think they could have put the hole in a different placement on the green, because I feel like every putt was hitting the ball down a driveway. You knew it was going to roll as fast as possible if you overhit it.
So if I told you 20 players were under par instead of zero, would that change your tune? Because remember, this was a par 70. It's rare, instead of original 72. So if you add those 8 strokes, all of a sudden you got 20 people under par. I should say even or under par.
I would have taken that, but to have one guy at even, I just thought it was a little too much.
Yeah, we didn't even have a guy at even. Brooks Koepka, he was one over, and he won the thing. Congratulations to him. Second straight U.S. Open victory.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world.
Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.